NVIDIA acquiring Hugging Face is one kind of AI story: consolidation, capital, control. What's happening with Google's Gemini releases this week is a different kind. Google is flooding the zone with model updates in a way that feels almost like a defensive response to the pace of the overall field.
Two separate Gemini announcements hit the top of HN today: Gemini 3.5 Transcribe and Gemini Omni 1.1 Flash. The Transcribe model is purpose-built for speech recognition and transcription, which is Google going directly at OpenAI's Whisper and, to a lesser extent, DeepGram and Assembly AI. The Omni Flash update is a performance and cost improvement to the multimodal model line that handles text, image, audio, and video.
The Transcribe release is interesting because speech-to-text has become infrastructure-level technology. It's not a differentiating product anymore, it's a commodity service. The fact that Google is releasing a dedicated transcription model suggests they see real enterprise revenue in it, even in a commoditized space. Their advantage is scale. Google has access to more diverse audio training data through YouTube than almost any other organization on Earth.
The HN comment thread on the Omni Flash model is notable because developers are actually doing live benchmarks in the comments, something the HN community does really well. The consensus seems to be that the Flash tier improvements are genuine, particularly on long context tasks, but that the pricing is still a question mark for high-volume production use cases.
What I find more structurally significant than either of those releases is the small models have arrived post that pulled 670 points and 300 comments. The author's argument is essentially that the narrative around AI has been dominated by scale, bigger models, more parameters, more compute, and that 2026 is the year where genuinely capable small models are making that narrative obsolete for the majority of real-world applications.
The economic argument is compelling. If you can run a model locally on a laptop or a phone that handles 80% of your use cases with 95% of the quality of a frontier model, the case for paying API fees to OpenAI or Google for those tasks evaporates. The frontier models still win on the hardest tasks, complex reasoning, novel research, edge cases, but hardest tasks is a smaller category than the industry has been assuming.
There's a geopolitical angle here that I don't think gets enough attention. Small models that run on consumer hardware have very different governance implications than models that require massive data center infrastructure. A model that runs on your phone can't be switched off by a corporation, can't be subject to geographic restrictions, can't be monitored at the API level. That's not inherently good or bad, but it's a structurally different world than one where all AI capability flows through a handful of large API providers.
And it puts enormous pressure on the business models of those API providers. If the commoditization of small models continues at the pace the HN Post suggests, OpenAI and Anthropic have maybe 18 to 24 months before the bottom falls out of their commodity tier API revenue. The fortress is the frontier, and the frontier keeps moving.
The Claude vocabulary study, the load-bearing vocabulary of Claude, is one of those community projects that only Hacker News could produce. 548 points, 263 comments, built by someone who systematically analyzed which words and phrases appear in Claude's outputs at rates far higher than their frequency in general text. The finding is that certain vocabulary is doing structural work in Claude's reasoning, words that act as organizational scaffolding.
The community discussion around this is worth reading carefully. Some commenters argue this is a form of mechanistic interpretability, actual insight into how the model organizes its outputs. Others argue it's mostly a reflection of training data and RLHF choices rather than something deep about the model's internal structure. The honest answer is probably both, and the line between those two things is genuinely unclear.
What strikes me is the practical application. If you know which vocabulary is load-bearing, which words Claude reaches for when it's scaffolding a complex response, you have better tools for both prompting and for auditing outputs. You can tell when the model is reaching for its structural crutches versus when it's generating genuinely novel reasoning.
The terminal bench science benchmark fits here too. It's a new evaluation framework for testing AI agents on actual scientific research workflows. Not can the model answer a chemistry question, but can the model navigate the full workflow a research scientist uses? Reading papers, running analyses, interpreting results, writing up findings. The benchmark design is itself a research contribution, and the HN discussion is thoughtful about what it would mean to take AI agent evaluation seriously in scientific contexts.
Bill Gates's Gates Notes essay titled "The Turbulent AI Era" rounds out this segment. 312 points, 561 comments. The comments outnumber the score by a wide margin, which usually means a polarizing piece. Gates's core argument is that AI is creating genuine disruption that will require active policy choices, and that the window for making those choices wisely is narrowing. The HN community is, predictably, split between people who find Gates's framing insightful, and people who think a billionaire philanthropist's concerns about AI disruption deserve serious skepticism about whose interests are being prioritized.